How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Dress? The History of Fashion is a production of Dress Media. With over 8 billion people in the world, we all have one thing in common. Every day, we all get dressed.
Welcome to Dress, the History of Fashion, a podcast that explores the who, what, when of why we wear. We are fashion historians and your hosts, Cassidy Zachary
and April Callahan. Dress listeners, the subject of our podcast today once remarked to the press, exaggeration is my reality. And many of you will already be guessing from the title of this episode that those words are that of the inimitable, wild, whimsical fashion editor, Diana Vreeland.
Yes, and of course, we have talked many times about Diana Vreeland on the show before, and most recently actually was in the context of the episode you did a couple months ago, April, with fashion historian and journalist Nancy McDonnell about her book, Empresses of 7th Avenue. And Vreeland was most certainly one of those empresses who really reigned over the world of fashion for decades. And to this day, she really remains an iconic figure in the history of fashion for a myriad of reasons. Starting with the fact that for 26 years, she worked as a fashion editor at Harper's Bazaar, beginning in 1936. And it was while she was there that she created some of the most memorable images in fashion history with a team that included photographers like Louis Stahl Wolf and Richard Avedon. And this was all, of course, before she controversially moved to Vogue, the heresy. These are very much rivals at this time.
She was seen as a traitor.
Yeah, though, if memory serves me correctly, this was after Carmel Snow was forced to retire or did retire, and then she was maybe passed over for the editor-in-chief job at Harper's Bazaar. And so in 1962, she left Harper's and she went on to be the editor-in-chief at Harper's rival, Vogue, in 1963. And she remained in this role until 1971. And we do have to say that Vogue during the Vreeland years, you know, this is the 1960s youthquake, which is a term that she is actually credited with coining in a Vogue article. Vogue during this period is just incredible. It's this sort of freewheeling phantasmagoria, which is one of my favorite words, of 1960s high fashion.
Just for an example, for instance, one time she gave the directive of, I want this place to look like a garden, but a garden in hell.
Yes.
So that kind of sums it up. You all get the gist. And a lot of these editorial shoots are these sartorial spectacles that frequently spanned the globe. And many of these fashion images remain some of the most iconic fashion images to this very day.
And just some more context on the column before we delve into some of Vreeland's suggestions. Essentially, this was an advice column of sorts where Vreeland would offer her suggestions on how to live a fashionable lifestyle. And of course, that often included fashion tips. But also it extended itself into giving advice on things like entertaining and interior design. And it's really important to note that Diana was very much part of this exclusive social set. She was part of this high society that she is writing about and writing to in these columns, which were always posed as a question. So starting with, why don't you? And then she would then present her thoughts almost as a sort of stream of consciousness. And basically, this column lets us peep into the mind of one of the most inventive fashion editors of all time.
Yes, and I want to say that some of these suggestions are quirky, to say the least. Some are outlandish. And oftentimes, it's difficult to ascertain if Vreeland is intentionally being a bit of a provocateuse or I guess we would say it today, whether she was poking the bear or if this was maybe a little bit of rage bait, as we would say today. But knowing her eccentricities, a good portion of these are probably quite sincere and or were even very real practices by some of the era's leading socialites who Vreeland even sometimes named in the columns. And many years later, Vreeland wrote about the column in her 1984 autobiography, which is entitled D.V., and she says, quote, "That column, Why Don't You, first appeared in Harper's Bazaar in the summer of 1936. It was rather frivolous. I don't remember too many of the ideas, thank goodness." And then she goes on to quote herself as writing one of the suggestions as, "For a coat to put on after skiing, get yourself an Italian driver's," and she means coat here, "of red orange lined in dark green. That was one of them," end quote.
She continues, and this is all one quote, so she's commenting on her past suggestions in her autobiography, and she says, "Have a furry elk kid trunk for the back of your car. They were all very tried and true ideas, mind you. We had a trunk like that on the back of our Bugatti." And then another suggestion is, "Knit yourself a little skull cap, turn your old ermine coat into a bathrobe," just casually.
Yeah.
The one that seemed to cause the most attention was the one about dead champagne. "Wash your blonde child's hair in dead champagne as they do in France." That got S.J. Perlman stirred up. S.J. Perlman is a well-known humorist of the period. And she goes on to say that he wrote a very funny parody in The New Yorker. Carmel Snow wrote Perlman a letter saying he shouldn't do such things, that it was upsetting for such a young girl to be criticized. Good heavens, I was in my 30s at the time and was very flattered. End quote. Which, when you learn about Diana and her sense of humor, all of that makes perfect sense, that she would be flattered by someone taking what she said and making light of it even further.
Yeah, absolutely. And that champagne quote that you mentioned is definitely one of the most well-known gems from her Why Don't You series. But let me assure you, those examples that she mentioned in her autobiography are tame in comparison to the ones that I've chosen for you all here today. And one thing that I really noticed as I was going through literally hundreds of these Why Don't You entries is that some distinct themes start to emerge. And I thought that would actually be a really good way to organize them. So, drumroll, Cass, would you like to do the honors of announcing our categories for today?
Why, certainly. Our themes for today are fashion, men, jewels, and interior designing / entertaining. Because, of course, being the time period that this is, these are the only possible preoccupations for women of Vreeland socialite circles could possibly have had. Which is also interesting when you consider that Diana Vreeland herself defied many of those stereotypes, right? She is a working woman herself, but I digress. And for the Harper's Bazaar readership, Vreeland's suggestions were at the least entertaining, if not aspirational, for a select few. So, okay, let's get back to why we are here today. April and I are going to do a little back and forth with each other within the categories. And April, you are going to start.
Yes. Okay. Up first is the fashion category. And we have this from the very first Why Don't You column in March 1936. Why don't you expose your fortune in an isinglass bag? Oh, this one was very intriguing for me. And it was my assumption when I read this that she is speaking about carrying some type of a clear handbag. And as we know from our 2022 episode, The Curious Case of Cellophane Couture, where Claire Sorrow joined us to speak about this trend for the use of cellophane in fashion, this was a whole fad in the 1930s for these sort of see-through fashions. But this term isinglass was entirely new to me. I had to look it up to see what it was. And I found out that, yeah, I didn't either. I found out that isinglass is a form of collagen, which is sourced from fish bladders. And historically, it has been used as a sort of gelatin-type product for all different types of food products, including the clarification process in making beer and wine. It's also been used in glue products. And more to the point of fashion, historically, isinglass has been used as a laundry starch.
Which is, I have to say, not where I saw that definition going at all.
Well, it keeps going because the term really starts to pop up in the context that we see it in the fashion press as early as the 1870s. But at that time, it was used for these panels in transparent hand fans that were fashionable. but it really ramps up in the 1920s. And we see it being used in millinery as isinglass ribbons, or some of the ribbons were shot through with isinglass to kind of make things sparkle. And also, we start to see it used for transparent packaging for fashion stuffs like handkerchiefs. And the high-end department store B. Altman even touted in Women's Wear Daily about their novel isinglass packaging as being more sanitary in terms of purchasing their products. But all of this aside, I hit the jackpot in a March 1942 article about handbag trends, which promoted bags inset with isinglass panels. So you could actually see the contents of your purse, or those around you could see the contents of your purse. And this is exactly the type of research rabbit hole I love going down. I love learning new things like this trend for isinglass handbags. So yeah, who knew? Cass, what do you have for us next?
From later that same year, in November of 1936, we have, why don't you call up John Powers, the model agency, for a professional model just your size and measurements who will fit all your clothes for you? The cost of a stand-in for fitting 8 dresses, which would take about 3 hours, is $7.50. So, dress listeners, this would be about $168 in today's money. And to be honest, while it sounds like a bit of an outrageous tactic, if one was super busy, it's not completely an unfair price because it would be about $30 per hour today. So, not to say that any modeling agencies out there now is going to have fit models working at this rate, or are there even personal fit models anymore? I'd never even necessarily heard of this, although once you think about it, it actually makes perfect sense for a woman on the go, for a woman who had a certain amount of money.
Yeah. Or I was a working woman at the time. Yeah. I always think of that scene in Romy and Michelle, and they're like, do you have a businesswoman special?
Yes. We're businesswomen.
Yeah, we're businesswomen. Okay, we're going to stay in 1936, and for this next little bit, it's the year is relevant because we have, why don't you zip yourself into your evening dress? While that might not seem like the most exciting bit of advice to us now, we also have to remember that the use of zippers in the 1930s, especially in things like evening wear, was also a novelty. And when Elsa Schiaparelli began incorporating exposed zippers in her evening gowns in the 1930s, it was considered shocking. See what I did there? Yeah, if you're Scat fans, you know. But it was considered very avant-garde because typically speaking, closures were meant to be very well hidden. They're not meant to be revealed, and they're certainly not meant to be highlighted as a feature of the dress, as like a decorative element. And I was super happy to see one of these 1930s Schiaparelli dresses in the Costume Institute's Women Designing Women exhibition last year. And that dress had the zippers exposed at the wrist. Do you remember that dress, Cass? It was that green one that had that very unusual textile for the time. It looked so contemporary.
Yeah, it really did look super contemporary. And I think more than one person audibly gasped when they turned the corner and saw it. And I was one of those people, and I'm sure you were too, because it was such a treat.
Especially when you look at the And we looked at the date, it could have been like 1997, and it was like 1930 something.
Yeah, so. And that exhibit was cool for a number of reasons, but that was one of them, that it challenged all of these narratives we have about women's fashion in particular, and seeing all these super early examples like Elizabeth Hawes pants from the 30s too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Elsa Schiaparelli was very much ahead of her time, and we take hardware for granted today, but it was very much a fairly recent innovation of the past. So our next fashion advice has to do with the art of wafting, which, if you don't know this term, I actually use this term, which is funny. I do occasionally find the chance to use this term. It's not super common today, but according to the Webster's Dictionary definition, it means to pass or cause to pass gently throughout the air. Dress listeners, when was the last time you used this word? And more importantly, when was the last time you yourself wafted through a room? Vreeland loved using this term, obviously, because it comes up several times in the run of the Why Don't You columns. And in 1936, she poses the question, why don't you waft a big bouquet about like a fairy wand? Presumably, I'm assuming, to ascend the air. And wafting will actually come up again in our thematic section on jewels, because how one wafts jewels is perhaps a little perplexing, but we will get to the bottom of that in a bit.
And while wafting a bouquet through the air for what? No particular reason. Maybe it was like a performative act, right? A little bit of theater. But this next one is on a more practical tip, but nonetheless curious. again from 1936, why don't you get a sports thermometer that you pin on to register the temperature when you are winter sporting or sunbathing? And at first when I read this one, Cass, I was like, why would you even need that? But then it dawned on me that I do check the temperature on my phone all the time, even when I'm already outside. So I guess it would serve much the same purpose as that on our phone today, just different form of technology and wearable at that.
And this next one is also very interesting because in 1937, Vreeland did a special column which ran in both the New York edition in February and the London editions of Harper's Bazaar in March. And it's entitled, Why Don't You? As does Schiaparelli. And April, I know that she is your all-time favorite designer. So will you, as Vreeland suggests Scap does, start using a gigantic shell as an ice bucket?
I wish. That would have to be a damn big shell. Where does one find those these days? Thanks, global warming. Yeah, this special Scap edition of Why Don't You was super fun. Just a few of these. Why don't you realize that this wonderfully creative woman is expressing our life and times in her little suits and dresses and in her unique materials, and realize that it's up to you to match her genius to add the perfect details to make them part of you. And Vreeland goes on with wonderful illustrations to recommend accessories like jewelry, boots, gloves to achieve this sort of surrealistic inspired Scap look. And then, of course, as you referenced, why don't you use a gigantic shell instead of a bucket to ice your champagne?
Some other shocking tips here include, why don't you wear violent velvet mittens with everything? And in this illustration, there are fingerless violent velvet mittens. And as we know, Schiaparelli was famous for her glove game, which is unmatched during this period. Her gloves are so whimsical and fun. And there's also, why don't you let your black wool skirt split to the knees, revealing a flash of parlor pink pants? And again, the illustration here is quite interesting because the skirt is pretty much floor length, and she has what can be best described in today's terms as espadrille stilettos. But these parlor pink pants are what we would think of as capri pants now. So they start just below the knee, and they leave the entire calf exposed, and it's a daring look for this time in particular in the 1930s. Less daring might be the suggestion to, quote, travel with a raspberry cashmere blanket to throw over yourself in hotels and trains. But all of these are relevant as they pertain to a fine bit of fashion satire, which we will detail when we get back from this short word from our sponsors. Dress listeners, holiday shopping season tis upon us, and Rakuten is the best way to save lots of money this holiday season. Why? That's because you can stack holiday sales and deals on top of Rakuten's cashback program to maximize your savings at 3,500 stores.
How does it work? Well, your favorite stores pay Rakuten to send them shoppers, and Rakuten passes some of that money directly onto their members via cashback, by PayPal, or a check.
And this holiday season, cashback rates will be the highest of the year, up to 15% depending on the store. And we are talking across every single category, including fashion, beauty, electronics, home essentials, travel, and dining.
As a pet owner, I especially love the fact that I can get cashback at PetSmart and Chewy when I shop them via Rakuten. Membership is free and it's easy to sign up. Join the 17 million members who are already saving. Start all of your holiday shopping at Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app to start saving today. Your cash back really adds up. Us ladies have all been there. Feeling a smidge off the days before your cycle is something that we have all experienced at one point or another. For some of us, it's occasional. For others, it's a monthly battle.
Which is why Happy Mammoth has created Estro Control, a capsule containing science-backed herbal extracts that help support hormonal health, especially in women who suffer from PMS.
The way Estro Control eases PMS is quite interesting. The ingredients help support the liver, and that's where our hormones get processed, especially estrogen. So when the estrogen isn't processed well in the liver, this can potentially trigger PMS.
Estro Control is made specifically for women who are premenopausal, so it's perfect for women that haven't entered menopause yet. In fact, it's amazing for perimenopause, when hormones start to fluctuate and PMS can hit hard.
For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code DRESSED at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code DRESSED for 15% off today.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Welcome back. Dress listeners, this particular Why Don't You on Schiaparelli was actually the subject of lampooning, as the column in general had also been by The New Yorker, but this time it would be by the Boston Herald, who published a satirical comic strip called Why Don't You, as the Boston Herald sees it, Keeping Up with Schiaparelli. And we're definitely going to post this on our Instagram, but just for our purposes here in our audio format, it is a 6-panel strip which illustrates the following scenarios with the following text. It says, why don't you, as does Schiaparelli, wear violent velvet mittens with everything? Pin an enormous topaz on your beige suit. Travel with a little raspberry-colored blanket to throw over yourself in hotels and trains. Why don't you use a gigantic shell instead of a bucket to ice your champagne? Signed, Harper's Bazaar. And then the comic strip replies, perhaps that's because we have a bucket.
And the next panel says, we even travel with a bucket to throw over us in hotels and trains. People stare sometimes, but we just say, if you think this is anything to stare at, you ought to see Schiaparelli. And then it has an illustration of a train conductor staring at a man on the train with a bucket on his head.
And there are some other passengers in the train, too, that don't have buckets on their head. So the panel after that says, we also wear violent velvet mittens with everything. And no one says anything either. They know there is a hand of steel in the mitten. And then the next panel says, and little raspberry blankets are old stuff to us, having used them in bullfighting. They make the bulls furious.
And if we had an enormous topaz, we would certainly pin it on our beige suit, if we had a beige suit. Now, does that answer the question? Harper's Bazaar should look us up, because when we throw down the violet velvet gauntlet, Schiaparelli trembles beneath her little raspberry-colored blanket and crawls into her gigantic shell. And then there's an illustration of two waiters in tuxedos peering into a huge shell, looking very surprised. I think Diana would have found this hilarious.
Yeah, for sure. And the text, when you read it in the audio format, it seems a little menacing, like they're like being threatening to Schiaparelli or something. But the illustrations really offset this because they're very silly and they're very playful. And I love fashion satire so much. Yet another episode that we keep saying that we're going to do. We will get to it one day. But speaking of getting to, something perhaps we should transition onto is our next theme, advice on men as appearing in the Why Don't You columns. What do you have for us on that, Cass?
Yes. So thematically, men feature as a less frequent subject in the column, but definitely make an appearance with a lot of suggestions, specifically for husbands. Like, why don't you make your husband change for dinner no matter what? And why don't you have mixed lunches, meaning both men and women are present, not just ladies who lunch? And of course, this is the 1930s and 40s, right? So different times. But why don't you have mixed lunches? You surely know some men who work uptown. This is obviously making the assertion that everyone who is anyone lives only uptown in Manhattan.
Yeah, and I live in New York City, and there are some people who still think this way. I've always been a downtown girl myself, the Upper East and Upper West Side. Y'all don't send me hate mail, but it's just too uptight for me. And it's really curious because I live in Brooklyn, and you can, when you're up there and then you come back to Brooklyn, this is even reflected in the way that people dress today.
Oh, yeah.
And it is really fascinating. This is a bit of a tangent, but do we have any other men-related tidbits, Cass?
Yes, we do. And first, I also just want to mention that Diana and her husband, Thomas Freeland, have to be one of the most stylish couples in fashion history. She is incredibly striking and he is very handsome. And they were married for over 40 years. He passed away in 1966. She didn't pass away until 1989. But her son, Freck Freeland, has an Instagram account. He's 97 years old, and still very much, according at least his Instagram account, very active. He's posts so many wonderful images and remembrances of his mom and his dad, which are just so lovely and also just gives you really personal insights into their life. So I highly recommend following him at Freck Vreeland. So F-R-E-C-K Vreeland. And I'll put a link to that in our show notes. So you have to wonder if Diana has Thomas in mind when she's making suggestions like, why don't you give your husband a red feather carnation to wear in his buttonhole? Or why don't you decorate your husband's room with 1,000 snapshots, photos, and newspaper clippings, starting with wedding pictures framed alike in little black frames? Even frame your wedding invitation and keep up this gallery by continually adding new mementos from your personal histories. First of all, it seems like she's suggesting that they have separate bedrooms, or she's assuming her readers have separate bedrooms, which
that's, you know, what I got exactly out of that too.
Yeah. And not an uncommon practice in society, especially in high society for hundreds of years. My grandparents, at least one set of my grandparents, had separate bedrooms for their entire lives, as far as I know. And certainly if you watch historical movies, you have probably seen and or wondered about this before. So there's a little bit of insight into that. And goes hand in hand, of course, right, with social norms, giving men and women their distinctive spaces.
Yes. And just tapping in on the decoration aspect of that, I find it to be overly sentimental, and I would personally hate that. Just like someone's room completely covered in like reminders of the fact that you married someone. I don't know. I don't know about that as an interior design theme.
Exactly.
But this does lead me directly into the next theme for us today, and that is Vreeland's advice on interior design and or entertaining, because sometimes they bleed over into each other. And there are some doozies in here, friends. Let's begin with this bit from July of 1937. Why don't you find a miniature Georgian chafing dish, dip it in gold, and use it beside your bed for cigarettes? Okay, I'm going to add my own why don't you, and that is, why don't you not catch the house on fire by smoking in bed?
And fact about Diana Vreeland is you'd be hard-pressed to find a photograph or a video of her without a cigarette. Right? Day and night smoker would be my guess. And that same column that you mentioned, April, is from July 1937, and it really keeps delivering on the interior design advice with, why don't you practically empty your bedroom, leaving only a box spring bed, and over it an enormous bouquet of Mexican altar flowers, of crimson-striped carnations, japonica, roses, and lilies. Decorations limited as these flowers. So is Decorations Limited the company?
I think it's a business, probably, because she does throw in, every once in a while, she'll throw in business promotions. You can get these here.
Okay.
I can see how that room would be very striking. I might be into that. What about you?
Yes, I'm a huge fan of fresh flowers, but how you would keep that fresh flower...
Oh, I don't think they're fresh. I think that they're paper flowers.
Oh, yes, that would be lovely. Although, again, dusting. Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
But beautiful idea, and very much something in tune, again, with Diana Vreeland's imagination.
Okay, here's an idea that I'm not into at all, and that is, why don't you have a white monkey fur bed cover mounted on yellow velvet? I'm going to pass, leaving on an entire bed cover of monkey fur for so many obvious reasons.
Yes, but for those of us who have a very visceral reaction to that, monkey fur was very fashionable historically.
Absolutely.
And in fact, especially Schiaparelli has famous monkey fur jackets and monkey fur gloves
and sweater vests.
Exactly. You have even Jean Lanvin, like there's a pochoir of a Jean Lanvin depicting a Jean Lanvin monkey fur jacket. So something that was very much a fashionable object or fashionable
very
textile.
1930s.
Yes, yeah. Fashionable textiles in the early 20th century before, of course, animal rights activists stepped up and protected monkeys and many other animals. So just a side note on that, if you were wondering where the heck would she come up with that idea, that's where she came up with it.
Okay, here's an idea that I might be into, and that is, why don't you paint every door in a completely white house the color of a different flower and thereby give each room its name?
Aww. Yeah, and actually when I think of Diana Vreeland, I think of her in that red room in her mm-hmm. apartment. So if you Google her, you'll see that. And actually color comes up quite a lot in her decorating suggestions, like, why don't you have a room done up in every color green? This will take months, years to collect, but it will be delightful. A melange of plants, green glass, green porcelains, and furniture covered in sad greens, gay greens, clear, faded, and poison greens. And also, why don't you realize the return of black and white in decoration? It is of tremendous importance. Use it wherever you can.
Yeah, that tremendous importance is so Diana.
And again, makes me think of Schiaparelli, because wasn't her mm-hmm. original boutique black and white? Yeah.
Yeah. And Jean-Michel Franck did her entire apartment in black and white as well. And famously, Chanel hated it. But of course, they were arch rivals. Okay. That green theme, I would be into that. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Especially if you get to collect all the objects over years and you're just constantly adding to your obsession for your green room.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, here's another fun one. I also might be into this, maybe for a special occasion. Why don't you use pineapples as decoration in your paneled room, low sofas, no flowers, but pineapples piled in large bowls on the floor, on low tables, wherever you can fit them. When the fire is lit and the guests arrive, the aroma from the fruit is wonderful. And this definitely paints a picture, right? It's strange and it's surreal. But maybe it seems like she actually did this at least once, because she says that the fragrance is wonderful, not would be wonderful. So who knows? We may never know.
Yeah. Although, again, scent, like color, is something that comes up time and time again in these columns, right? And we do know that Diana Vreeland, when she was a curator at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, something that would never happen today, she used scent in the galleries in mm-hmm. her museum exhibitions. And she's famous for these museum exhibitions and for taking museum exhibitions to this new level by introducing ahistorical elements, but also theatrical, extravagant elements to fashion exhibitions, at specifically the Metropolitan Museum, where she went after she was fired from Vogue, right? So she leaves Correct. Vogue and she becomes the curator in charge of the costume collection at the Met in the 70s, and famously did a Yves Saint Laurent exhibition where they also launched his opium perfume and they mm-hmm. wafted it through the galleries.
So much wafting in this episode. We've never wafted before on Dress, but we have now. And also tie back into the Met's most recent exhibition,
yeah,
which included elements of scent in it as well, albeit like in a more contained format. So
yeah. Diana Vreeland was very controversial in many ways, but also very groundbreaking, especially within our field in terms of introducing elements we're used to with, say, Andrew Bolton and museum exhibitions. She was really the person who set that in motion. Her legacy lives on. And okay, going back to her column, there's also a wonderful and very endearing suggestion on this note of entertaining. And this comes to us from July 1937, where she writes, "Why don't you, if a guest arrives at your house after a long motor trip, have the bed turned down and lay out a white shantung dressing gown, tailored like a man's and monogrammed with your particular monogram on the sleeve?" Because one has a particular monogram, obviously.
Absolutely. We all do.
"So that she may rest while she is being unpacked." Because again, clearly, not only do we all have our own monograms, but we also have guests who have their own ladies' maids to do said unpacking while we rest.
And that unpacking would most certainly include plenty of jewels for evening soirees and maybe even daytime wear as well, because Vreeland's personal obsession with gems and jewelry, and she was obsessed. People talk about it all the time. She infamously said one time that she'd rather have a new piece of jewelry than a new dress. But jewelry is a major topic of advice in these columns. And sometimes the jewelry advice is the most outlandish of them all, including my personal favorite of them all. "Why don't you carry on a long diamond stick, a diamond rose with a sponge in the heart of the petals to waft your scent as you go." Here we go again.
Diamonds, diamonds, so many diamonds in these suggestions. In January of 1937, we get, "Why don't you try clipping long, flat diamond clips all the way down one side of your hair, as a Molyneux blonde did, making a superb frame for a very piquant face. And why don't you own as does one smart woman, 12 diamond roses of all sizes, wear 5 for a necklace around the pearls as Maggie Roof does.
And of course, for any of you who don't know, Maggie Roof was a very well-known fashion designer at this time and at French Couture House, yes. That same column also asks us, why don't you have a wide black belt with big, uneven, semi-precious stones set in it with a multicolored effect of pink rubies, topazes, amethysts, tourmalines, as Lady Abdi does?
Yes, especially in these jewelry suggestions, Vreeland chronicles the unique ways many of the society women wore their jewels. So in November of 1937, she asks, why don't you remember that long swinging diamond chandelier earrings are frightfully smart again and wear them occasionally as Madame Cert does, pinned 4 inches below either shoulder on a high-necked black silk satin dress? And why don't you consider the chic of wearing bracelets high in the arm and try Lady Mendel's thin black leather bracelets, which she wears just above the elbow with a huge diamond bracelet at the wrist?
I would do that.
Yeah.
That sounds cute. But also, by way of all these assertions, it's also just like saying, why don't you own all of these fabulous jewels?
Vreeland actually had a huge collection of jewelry, very famously, very expensive jewelry. And when she died in 1986, the following year, there was actually a huge auction for her jewelry at Sotheby's. So you can find the auction catalog online and see exactly. Again, she lives in another world.
And speaking of jewelry auctions at Sotheby's, friends, tune in on Friday because we're going to be talking about a really hot one that just happened last week. So
yes.
There's a theme we have going here.
Yeah, a couple different themes, actually, I think are translating to Friday.
Okay, so we're going to start to wrap things up today. And I would like to put forth something that I personally think is a charming idea and one that many of us could actually integrate into our own lives. It's not out of the realm of possibility for most of us. And it comes from the April 1938 issue of Harper's Bazaar. And it asks us, why don't you give each of your bridesmaids an enameled flower clip copied exactly from one flower in your wedding bouquet? Oh, and that is so cute and sweet and probably definitely doable.
Yeah, actually, for my wedding, I did something similar on that entirely similar, but the same idea. I took a little piece of my lace that I had actually bought in France that was on my wedding dress, and I had it enameled by my friend Penny into a tiny little pendant that my bridesmaids could wear. So, yeah. So that sentiment is alive and well.
Nice.
So in 1938, the Why Don't You column ceased publication for a period of 3 years. They appeared again very briefly in the war years of the 1940s. And at the editor's opening remarks for the May 1941 issue of Harper's Bazaar, we learn, quote, for the first time in 3 years, our fashion editor, Diana Vreeland, has been prevailed upon to revive her kaleidoscopic Why Don't You column, this time devoted to ideas for a country house. And actually, I am familiar with these now that I'm reading this aloud again. I actually came across these in my research for my World War II class. Actually, they are still very funny. And the column appeared only a couple of times, again, in 1943 and 1945. Vreeland's enthusiasm for the column, which, as we heard earlier, she dubbed frivolous, however, waned in the war years.
And actually, she writes specifically about in her autobiography, she noted that she was happy that the war years brought an end to the, quote, absurdity of it all. But cut to more than 75 years later, Mrs. Vreeland, we are still here talking about your Why Don't You columns, very much enjoying the silliness, the inventiveness, and the camp of it all. So thank you very much for that, wherever you may be. And for any of you who would like to learn more about Diana Vreeland, please check out her 1984 autobiography, DV, which is now on our dress bookshelf. And let's just say that you have to take some of the things in her autobiography with a grain of salt. Remember, exaggeration is her reality, she said at the top of the show. And also, too, there is a wonderful documentary film out there, which was produced by Lisa Immordino Vreeland, called Diana Vreeland, The Eye Has to Travel. And I think that came out sometime around 2011. So it's probably available on multiple streaming platforms out there. There are also a few additional books on Diana Vreeland. These are easily searchable. A lot of them are out of print, so I'm hesitant to name them here. You can go into your own rabbit hole if you wish. If they are out of print and you do want to read them, we just want to issue the friendly reminder that your local library, if they don't have a particular book, almost always, if they have an interlibrary loan program, they can request it from a different library. It will show up at your library and you can borrow it for an allotted amount of time.
I love interlibrary loan. I use it a lot. And also, Dress listeners, I just wanted to give a shout out to a new book that I'm reading, which is called Fashion Projects, 15 Years of Fashion and Dialogue. It's edited by Francesca Granata. And this book, it collects a bunch of articles from this long-running journal called Fashion Projects. So it's interviews with people within the field of fashion studies, so designers, critics, curators. And it gives a really interesting perspective of the rise of fashion studies in the last 20 years. But something that I really appreciate about it is it opens, and April, we've talked about this, with an interview with Harold Coda, who is very famous in our world. And if you don't recognize his name, you will recognize his work because he is one of the co-curators of the Alexander McQueen Savage Beauty exhibition at the Met and did that with Andrew Bolton. And then Andrew Bolton succeeded him when he retired. Harold Coda is one of the most groundbreaking fashion curators in our field. Got his start under Diana Vreeland at the Met. And this book, Fashion Projects, opens with an interview with Harold, and he talks about Diana Vreeland and how important she is in terms of bringing what I already discussed earlier into fashion exhibitions. And so I highly recommend checking that out if you want something a little more fashion studies based, learn more, a little bit more about our field and one of the very important aspects of exhibiting fashion. So I recommend it. All right, dress listeners, I think that does it for us today. May you consider doing a little wafting in your closet or your house next time you get dressed. Remember, we love hearing from you, so please feel free to reach out to us at dressedhistory.com. Dressedhistory.com is also our website where you will find more information about our upcoming classes, tours, and anything else we have up our finely tailored sleeves. And just so you know, that includes very soon our next Dress the School of Fashion course, which we are hoping to launch within the next couple of weeks. April and I are going to be co-teaching a 4-part class on the 1950s golden age of haute couture. So if you want to know everything you could possibly know, or at least know in a 4-hour class about this incredibly special period in the history of fashion, meet the designers, go behind the scenes, that is coming your way in the new year. And we are also going to be announcing our Dressed Fashion History Tour at Paris 2025 very soon, April.
Yes. And also, my fashion history tours of the Met are back. And they were on pause for a little bit while I was in Paris for a couple months. And so many of you wrote to us asking, like, why is there no availability on the calendar? And that's because I was not in New York, so I couldn't do the tours. But I'm back now, so as of last night, actually. So head over to dressedhistory.com and you can sign up either. Now I'm going to start offering Tuesday morning tours and also the Friday evening tours remain the same as well. And I just also want to put out there, and I've done several of these already, I can also do tours for your group. If you have a group of people coming to New York or your organization or is already in New York, I can do these at other times. Just connect with me in advance and you can set all of that up by emailing us at hello@dressedhistory.com.
Yeah, and I also just want to say a question that I know you get occasionally is that you can send people their tickets so they can come earlier to the museum as well. If you want to spend like the day at the Met and then go to April's tour in the early evening, you can.
I sure can. And that's actually something that happened like a few months ago that wasn't always possible. Now I can do the online ticketing process and then send people their tickets in advance. So then they just meet us at our meeting point whenever the tour is about to start.
Yes. And also coming your way in the new year is New York day tours, because there are several really exciting exhibitions coming. And so I'm going to go to New York and we will be offering some day tours for you. So stay tuned, dress listeners. Yes. So many exciting things up our sleeves. Okay. If you'd like visual content connected to each week's episodes, follow us on our Instagram at dressed_podcast. If you want to find the content specifically connected to this episode, just look for the hashtag dressed522. We offer these hashtags now in case you're listening to this a year from now. You can find our visual content. The holidays, dress listeners, are also just around the corner, so please check out our more than 150 favorite fashion history titles on our dress bookshelf at bookshop.org/shop/dressed. We also have a link to that in our show notes. And send your loved ones your wish list or buy for someone you love.
Love Dress but want to skip the ads? Consider subscribing to the ad-free version of the show for just $3 a month. As always, thank you for your continued support. More Dressed coming your way on Friday. Dressed, the history of fashion, is a production of Dressed Media.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.